First is to know sort of what the degree of difficulty is or what the level of intensity is, so you can know, it's part of mindfulness, and it would help one to know what tools are useful. And again, generally, we would, if we feel out of balance, our first intention would be to come back to balance. Come back, you know, if we're caught in the anger or fear or anxiety or judgment, we'd want to do things which can somehow bring us to more balance. Could be a few things, you know, could be, again, something physical. You know, I mentioned that, you know, how after a meeting I would do something physical to sort of work things out. A lot of the tension is stored in the body, so the exploring the mind-body relationship here is very interesting, right? To see how much, you know, how much is actually the body which is taking in the and expressing the difficulty. So body practice, then going back to what we looked at earlier, heart practices can be very helpful. These are also ways of coming back to balance, to work with metta, or to work with compassion or forgiveness. All very, very skillful. They can sometimes, sometimes they're useful just for being with the situation. Sometimes they can actually, they're more antidotes. They take us temporarily out of the situation or they shift the energy. And sometimes we need that, you know. And again, it can be sometimes just to shift the focus. You know, sometimes if we're in a particular location, you know, we all know the situation probably of being in our house a little bit stewing about something, and you take a walk and something shifts, right? So to have in one's repertoire four or five ways to shift out of stuck places, you know, it's helping make a little, you know, wristband which has these all, or put it in your pocket, you know, okay. Oh, I am stuck. You know, okay. Number one option? No. Number two? No. Three? Yeah. Okay, take a walk. Right, something like that, or talk to a friend. So to come unstuck. You know, it also can be helpful sometimes just to sometimes reflect or to have some, you know, some wisdom guide oneself. Maybe simply to say, this will pass. You know, or if one's going to a negative scenario, you might say, I don't know. This is the voice of wisdom speaking, you know. I don't know, or this will pass, or, you know, this is a potential learning situation. You know, I think I've given a talk here, Taking Everything as Learning, right? These all help kind of take the edge off, you know. And then if we have some mindfulness, we can stay with it, we can be with it, see what it's like, study it, right? Try to watch the part of one's own being that wants it to go away. So those are a few. Probably a lot of you were thinking, well, how about this? And maybe we can, if people want to add something that I didn't mention that you find helpful, please jump in for a moment.
Singing.
Yeah, singing. Being, we can come up front in a moment, but being with beauty can be very helpful. You know, taking a walk, being with beauty, being with something which is beautiful and pleasurable. Very, very helpful, because partly what we do, you know, it's interesting. I've just finished personally taking a 3-year training in trauma. And one of the, you know, trauma is a lot of times being caught in an inner vortex, right? And has some similarities to what we're talking about. It's way more intense and way more in the body in certain ways. But one of the core tools is finding ways to come out of that inner vortex and be shifted. So being in the trauma training, being with the external world and just engaging in a normal way, maybe being with a tree or being with, especially with something which is pleasurable, is very, very helpful for shifting out of that difficult state. So being with beauty, beauty being with something which is pleasurable, maybe that's why people head to the refrigerator, I don't know. You know. And then, you know, something like singing. So I think something, again, we'll have to find our own way. Something which engages the body, like singing, can be very helpful, or chanting, or listening to familiar, soothing music, of course, yeah. And please.
Yeah. I find sometimes to go further into the aversion, to really embrace it.
Yeah.
Because often I'm halfway.
Yeah,
doing the push-pull.
Yeah, if there's a reasonable degree of balance, one can go further into it. Say, let me just look here. Now, I think that does, you have to have a discernment. Am I really stuck and totally caught? Often, that wouldn't be a wise strategy in that case.
Well, it's so uncomfortable, we want to get away from it. So
yeah.
We're kind of just, we're not fully embracing.
It can, but there's a discomfort that just has me going around in circles. And I guess what you're saying is that sometimes even when I'm pretty stuck in it, the intention to go into it can be loosening, is it?
Well, I'll notice sometime, it's like, okay, let's really get in there, and in my mind will actually get tired of it after a while.
So I think that can often be skillful. Again, I'm suggesting that there's a distinction between when we're caught in it so much that there's no room to move. In that case, we want to shift out of it. Again, when we shift out of it, that's a skillful means. We're not going to learn anything about it or engage in learning. When we have some wiggle room, as it were, and we say, I want to really see what this is about, let me go into this aversion, then there's actually potential for learning. Because we can have mindfulness. What's this like? What's this feel like? You know, what's going on? What's this really about? You know, and that, you know, that again, that factor of curiosity is really, really important, really helpful. Yeah, thank you. We're having a little more hands with the difficult emotions than
I find that being with a loving animal.
Yeah.
Even if I borrow a friend's dog or or my cat, but the dog is more looking, watching birds.
Beautiful, yeah. Yeah, I think of a friend who uses that all the time, is going through a difficult stretch now, and regularly goes to a friend who has a wonderful dog, and just very, very helpful, yeah. Thank you. Okay, and then Lucy in the back afterwards. Yeah.
I just wanted to add on going into nature, that nature can be helpful because it's not linear and it's kind of, it's actual chaos in nature. And my expectation is not in a linear fashion. That X is supposed to happen, Y is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
When that doesn't happen, when that's disrupted, then somehow my orderly world is disrupted. There, once I go into nature, which isn't really orderly world, it's kind of this amazing bunch of stuff.
Ordered chaos,
yes. And it somehow is soothing. It's a very soothing environment.
That's a really interesting point, isn't it? That something which, you know, because a lot of our some of our difficulties on the body and the level, we're just caught in something. Sometimes we're caught in a negative scenario or a judgment. I am this way. We go to something as if it's true. And something which works with a different kind of logic in which the unexpected might occur, right? You go by the bay, and all of a sudden a seagull comes and lands 10 feet away. And says, "Whoa, look at that." And it goes against the certainty. I think that's a beautiful point. It goes against the certainty of that I am definitely to blame, or this negative catastrophic scenario will definitely happen. You know, it cuts through that certainty because it says, huh. Basically, it just takes our mind somewhere else. So, yeah. Interesting, yeah. So we're up for either additions. It's fine to make other points or ask other questions, too. Yeah.
I have another question.
Yeah.
And it's one that I been deliberately avoiding bringing up today, but I decided I would anyway.
Yeah.
I am having a real struggle dealing with a lot of the violence.
Right.
And situations that have been occurring in our culture and our world.
Yeah.
I think San Bernardino tragedy didn't push me over the edge, but it brought up another emotion that I have really not felt in the past, and that's a real fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel helpless,
really,
to do anything about any of this, except I can acknowledge it. I can say, yes, it's happening. I can say, no, it's not everybody that's involved in this. But I really, you know, I don't know where to go with some of these feelings that I have about how what's going on.
Yeah, thank you. How many can relate to that? Yeah, okay. And I've been reflecting a lot about fear particularly. And in my study, I have a little poster from the Bread and Puppet Theater of one of their shows, which was called The Story of One Who Set Out to Study Fear. And it inspires me. And essentially, again, we can recognize that the level of difficulty or intensity is up near the nines or tens. That's important to recognize. To know that it's, like you say, it's near one's edge, right? Now, for these kind of situations in the world, I think, again, we want to distinguish between how we can work more internally with the experience and how we want to respond outwardly. You know, and again, there are a lot of possible outward responses, depending on the situation. Internally, it's actually still to work with everything we've been looking at today. Now, an interesting thing about the fear, which is the case, I think, with these other difficult emotions, which is a point that I haven't mentioned yet, which is that fear, I think, like anger or like judgmental mind, is a mix of discernment and what we might call skillfulness and unskillfulness. Another way we could say it's a mix of intelligence and reactivity. And it's very helpful to know that. We can see the reactivity reading the newspapers, right? Really obvious. You know, even before San Bernardino, we could see the way that fear is this going to negative scenarios, worst case scenarios, going to generalization. We could see that particularly among the Republican presidential candidates, right? You know, it's too scary to admit a 3-year-old Syrian orphan into the country. Let's not go there, right? That was Governor Christie, if you remember that. Or let's only have Christians, right? You know, so you know, it's hard to know whether that's sincere fear or just politicking, hard to know, or both. But it's helpful to be with the difficult emotion and to see we could ask a question. Sometimes it takes some inquiry, but basically if we stay with it and study it using all the practices that have been named so far today, with something like fear, hang out with it. And because of what's happening, it actually is not an easy practice, right? And I mentioned I had a retreat where I was with fear maybe 12 hours a day for a week or 10 days, right? And it might have been pretty hard to do that if I was just at home. In the retreat context, there was support to do that. It was incredibly illuminating, especially after a while. Not at the beginning, it was just hard. But after a while, I started seeing things, you know. So I would suggest practicing. Again, we want to hold the difficult emotions with the heart practices, with compassion. So more compassion, more metta, whichever of those heart practices works for you, is very important. Because the heart practices, again, can serve partly as antidote when we're potentially losing some balance, right? In the tradition, metta, or loving kindness, was directly taught as an antidote to fear by the Buddha. You know, it's an antidote to fear, and I won't tell the story that I've told. I think here I've told the story of when I was camping and there was a bear that had been in my campsite, and I went there and I got, you know, I said, okay, I'll go there. Yeah, bear. Okay, no problem. And then I thought about it. I came back at 9:30, and I actually, you know, got lost in fear and anxiety for maybe half an hour, and I said, time for metta, time for loving kindness, and did it for 3 hours in a row, and something got worked out. So fear and metta, and of course you can, you know, if you're on the edge, you can really moderate how much attention you give to the media, right? That would be important. Moderate how much you go use metta and compassion significantly, and then work with the practices if you can. Really study the nature of fear. There's an opportunity here to really work with it. And again, I would say that a key for all of these difficult emotions is seeing that there are mixes of what I'm calling discernment or noticing and reactivity. Another way we could say this is that the difficult emotions are typically a mix of aspects that are skillful and aspects that are unskillful. So something like fear, a lot of fears point towards real dangers. There's discernment there. Mm-hmm. That's skillful. That's mm-hmm. discernment, right? There are real dangers where, you know, at the edge of a cliff, we feel fearful. Well, that's intelligent, right? Or, fearful about how this course of events will go with this, whatever, this activity or this, you know, what the organization's doing, et cetera. Well, there is intelligence and discernment, at least in saying this is potentially dangerous or this is dangerous, right? That's intelligent. Or to say this is very concerning about the level of violence. That there's discernment there. There's something that's very valid. And then the unskillful aspects of fear are particularly the proliferation of thinking, the way we go to overgeneralizations and negative scenarios in particular, right? Again, it's very helpful to notice that in oneself and then to see how it is in the public. Study the people who are making very reactive comments which share those characteristics of going towards overgeneralization and negative catastrophic scenarios which go way beyond the data. Right? That's where fear is unskillful. And you can notice that in yourself. Study it in yourself, how you go in that way. And you can look at other, you know, ways that it leads to, you know, how the fear can lead to, if you go too much in that sense of negative scenarios and repeat them over and over again, it'll take you out of balance, right? It'll be confusing, take you out of balance, maybe lead to unskillful actions. We want to study all that. Mm-hmm. If you can study all that carefully, which is not easy, then you are much more aware of how fear works and much more skillful when it arises. And you can also see how it's operating in the public and outside. And, you know, we have a history in this country of overreacting to fearful situations, right? We have a history, with 9/11, with one example, it was after Pearl Harbor, right? There was the internment of the Japanese, right? And pretty pure overreaction and overgeneralization, right? And, you know, there was an article in the New York Times just in the last week or two, which was interviewing some older Japanese couples who were saying, you know, we do not want what happened with us to happen with people from the Middle East, right? And it was very beautiful and eloquent. And also, in the story, they actually summarized the 1980 congressional report on the internment of the Japanese. And they said there was actually, this was the Congress, not some, you know, whatever, left-wing historian. This was the US Congress concluding there was no real national security interest, number one. Number two, it was primarily based in what they said was race prejudice, war hysteria, and failures of leadership. Right? Occasioned by fear. Right? So that's a long answer, I guess.
No,
but
that's a perfect answer.
What?
I think that was a good answer.
Yeah. And so it actually is an opportunity, you know. Good. I'm kind of glad we touched on that, because it's on people's minds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's very relevant to the theme of the day. Yeah. Maybe just two more, I think, and then we'll go to walking.
Yeah, proliferation of fear on that topic.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the flip side of what we're talking about, but the same thing, I think. I often wake up with ill feeling, and it's amorphous. I can't identify where it's coming from. It's fear, it might be anger, it's concern and worry.
Yeah.
On this particular occasion, it was the beginning of the day, and I was driving, I just left the house, and I knew there was fear.
Yeah.
And I found myself, and I had about that 4% of mindfulness that you talked
yeah.
about earlier.
Yeah.
And I found myself scanning the day ahead of me, looking for an object to lodge my fear in,
right.
something I could fear.
Yeah.
Because I had the fear, and I needed something to invest it in. And then I just woke up and realized, whoa, this is how it works. San Bernardino is an easy target.
Yeah.
But I wonder if we all do that.
Yeah, great example. And again, that what you're reporting is studying fear and coming to that insight. And the next time that happens, it'll be different. Right, you know, and also sleep, and going into the unconscious and dream cycle can present that material to ourselves. Of course, you know, when we're asleep or right in on waking, so it's understandable. It sounds like you worked with it well, and then just were able, just by the seeing of it, something shifted. Yeah, so it's great. Again, the invitation is particularly just to keep studying this and compare notes, you know, and it's fine to take notes on this, you know, take notes on what you find, because the dynamics actually, are not that complicated. It's you'll find, again, with all these difficult emotions, they have something like, they're somewhat different logic, but they all typically have something that is intelligent, right? Anger often is the report of noticing some norm or boundary which has been violated, right? And again, then it can proliferate, go into judging, blaming, all sorts of things which are not skillful. But there is a skillful aspect to most of these difficult emotions, and they're confusing because they're a mix of the skillful and the unskillful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the intelligent and the deluded. It's confusing because of that mix, right? Because
yeah.
A lot of times you say, oh, I'm clearly in the right related to this anger. Therefore, wherever my anger takes me is fine. Not true, right? Even if, it's like this, I thought of this cartoon from the New Yorker, which shows a gravestone, and the epitaph was, he had the right of way. Maybe last one, and then we'll... I'll take the two more.
Okay, I just sometimes I find, and I think this is related to some of the other answers, connecting to something larger.
Yeah.
Fear is like, well, I'm not the only one afraid. Fear, fear belongs.
Great.
Fear is
that's great.
All of us. So
yeah.
I think about other people that are afraid, or other people that are, and I think about it, and that sometimes can release me.
That's great. Something bigger, and that's actually closely related to compassion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like, oh, we're all in this together. This is a human condition. Yeah. It's really making the point that one of the aspects of difficult emotions that can be very hard is a sense of isolation.
Right.
And so connecting, very great point. Yeah, thanks. Maybe last one?
One thing that I read about the situation, and where somebody was quoted as saying, well, when something terrible happened, my mother would always say, look for the helpers.
Hmm.
Don't look at, look for whatever, you know, it will elicit, which it always does, compassion in many people, and elicit, you know, help of a kind. And he, when he was a child, his mother would say, focus on that. Look at how people, look at the good in people. Don't get caught up in the bad. There is the bad, but don't get caught up in it. Look for the good in, you know, it gives you hope for humanity.
So yeah, beautiful. So, wise lineage. That's great. Yeah, to be able somehow, in the midst of difficulty, to see the positive, or, you know, another way, you know, to hold it is to take everything as potential learning, not just personal learning, but social or cultural learning. It's a way to hold things. It's not saying that it will necessarily happen, you know, but it's a potential, you know, and certainly it, you know, it's can be very likely to happen personally, because we have a lot of whether we learn depends on conditions, and the conditions of being a practitioner are good for now. You know, we have the support here, you know, it's way more likely something difficult happens to you, and you may remember, oh, what can I learn from this? You know? Among other things, you can learn more about difficult emotions, right? Which is very significant. Yeah. Okay. Maybe, why don't we just sit for a few moments? There's been a lot here. Maybe let it settle. We'll have a kind of transition towards going back into silence. And what I'm thinking that we'll do is we'll have a walking meditation, and then we'll come right back to a sitting, and I won't give any new instructions. And so we'll have a kind of an extended quiet time. I think the sitting will be, maybe not quite as long as we've done, maybe 15 or 20 minutes. So we'll have an extended, oh yeah, you had an announcement. I forgot that at 1:30, didn't I? Yeah.